This is an MUT Radio podcast.
The time is 32 minutes past 3, and you are listening to MUT Radio Shape and On the Future. As I've promised that at this time, we're going to be having an interview, a special interview with Dr. Sazi Dlamini. If you don't know about Dr. Sazi Dlamini, Dr. Sazi Dlamini is a musicologist and a lecturer in South African jazz and popular music history at the University of KwaZulu-Natal, where he was awarded a doctorate of philosophy degree for his thesis, South African Blue Notes, Bebop Mpakanga, Apartheid and the Exiling of a Musical Imagination in 2009. Band leader, guitarist and composer in the jazz-influenced South African township tradition, he released a debut CD album, Skokkien, in 2017, documenting more than 30 years of composing and performing. He is a founding member of Insurrections Ensemble, a multinational multimedia performance collective that includes musicians, visual artists, puppeteers, video artists, and poets from South Africa, India, Tanzania, China, and Ethiopia. His interest in musical bows focuses on ugubu, umakhwiyana, umqangala, uhadi, and ithontolo, and he builds musical instruments including flutes, harps, horns, and from bamboo, reeds, horn, calabash, various recycled materials and found objects. He is a volume editor of Musical Bows of South African published Bloomsbury in 2020. Dr. Saz.
Oh, Pungash.
Ninjan.
It was in Kona, okay. Ninjan went.
Gisapil.
Yeah, boy.
I must say, your bio is long, but you need to be shy.
Oh, hey, you're cool. Hey, I come on, get a go on a look. It's in the Sanga, not listen to a moon. It's near Pegadi, it's near Pegadi.
Yeah,
Sanga Nila again.
Oh,
what an itai, Samba.
Thank you so much for taking your time on a Sunday and honoring my invite. On this precious day and this month, Heritage Month, where we learn more about our culture and our diversity. I think instruments also plays a huge role in with our culture and diversity in connecting us. So without further ado, maybe one should ask, where did the passion of music with Dr. Sazi came from, and why you started you pursued that career in music? Because I must say, I know that you once studied medicine, but before even you studied medicine, you went to study something else, and you were one of those people who worked from Forte during apartheid and coming back home. And but later you made a decision that you want to pursue music in art. I think later I'm gonna have a question for you regarding those times, during those times, that did the instruments played a vital role in connecting you with your cultural background or with your homage, you know, that you never wanted to lose, even if those times were difficult for students and for people at large. So please tell us more, where the passion did it start?
Hey, Pungashi. The passion for music, I guess, it predates my studying. I think it comes from both being of born, I mean, from family, I should say, and the school, you know, early school culture. And performance there. But mainly from being family and the kind of family that in which I felt music was part of every day. Starting from church music, because our family was very church orientated, our parents. And further than that, being church people as such, they still had a great respect for tradition, especially when it comes to performance.
Mm.
You know, and yeah, and it was something now that you realize that I first studied other fields. It's something that I came back to when I found that I wasn't perhaps well oriented in pursuing such careers, or maybe I had, you know, I didn't have a passion for such. But music, I think it comes directly from family, and also being surrounded by cultural people, be it growing up in the township, well, first in the countryside, being like, you know, songs of young men, you know, or women, you know, or songs of the country dances, you know, and being of the township, the church, you know, as well as a youth culture of making music. We made teens our own music, those kind of narratives. Yes, we did. And my brother, actually, my elder brother, Njeza, he was more the mentor in music, you know, because he was just you could call him a music rebel, because very soon in his secondary school, he just was a music man. He played professional music from about standard, he was in Form 1, at Standard 7. And having brought the tin guitars at home from our uncles, you know, making that. So I think the passion, you know, built on that, you know, and my coming back to it also recalled that sure thing that one can put on one's orientation in life, you know, to find bearing.
So the love of jazz, would you say it came with a particular instrument back in the days that influenced maybe your future or your well-being, or I don't know, but you've mentioned your elder brother, knowing him as a musician, but everyone within your family plays instruments, you know, whether they're singing or whether they're playing guitars. But why jazz?
For me, jazz was one of the strong influences, cultural influences, on perhaps just broadening one's musical cultural experiences, you know. You know, and also that I think it's a kind of music that linked to a broader a way of being, you know, human, of being black, you know, of being African. And as well, I remember my first encounter with jazz wasn't playing, it was from radio.
Mm.
I was quite young and my father had bought a radio, I think it was 1966.
Mm.
And we heard this music one day. We asked my father, hey, "Father, what is? Because it was unusual, you know." He said, "This is Kehle Gumbe, you know." And now, and he didn't call it jazz. He said, "This is Kehle Gumbe, you know." My father was born in 1923. So it's a music that was there even when he was a young man, you know, and. And that's what he recognized, because I think it was this thing of the bass drum, you know, and the hi-hat, you know, the very rhythmic thing, dancing about. Said, oh, this is Kehle Gumbe, you know. Kehle Gumbe. And also he told stories of Africans that were slaves. That's how I know were African slaves who left Africa and were in America and could not come back. And now that as youngsters, it was shocking that there's a person who can leave home and not be able to come back. And then they'll play music like this, you know, Kehle Gumbe. It like, you know, imagination ran wild.
Yes.
Yeah.
I must say, you may, it's a very interesting story, you know, and we can go on with it.
I'm telling you, yeah.
Yeah, but I would like to know, because you mentioned that back then you started creating your own instruments.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to know the know-how of creating your own indigenous instruments or... Mm. What are the instruments, indigenous instruments that we have currently, and how do you go about in terms of making them? As also, are we also using the recyclable materials to create?
Look, about instruments, I must just qualify this thing. I do make indigenous instruments, you know, but the tin guitar, I've never been able to make a tin guitar. That was Jeza's speciality.
Wow.
Jeza can make a tin guitar. I mean, I could try now, but indigenous instruments that I've been exposed to, I do make them, you know, and I don't know if they qualify for the indigenous in a sense. Maybe we should revisit that understanding of indigenous, Mshana, because much as there are indigenous traditions, including instruments, the word itself speaks to something else, you know. For example, even the tin guitar, even though it's made with products of industry like tin and wire, because it's made in a particular place, it's indigenous to that place.
Yeah.
That's another understanding that needs to be qualified about indigenousness. And that also comes to sound, you know, sounds that originate from a place and from certain definite experiences. It might be today, you know, but they are indigenous to that place, you know, and to those people, you know. So that's one other thing that I think is very important in talking correctly about the idea of indigenousness or attributing value to it or cultural capital, you know. Yeah, the instruments I've tried, because when I was born also, there were no, I did not see some of, all of the instruments that I make.
Really?
No, they were not there anymore. Not Makweana, not Mkangala, you know, not Mchingo, not even flutes. You know, they were not there anymore. No.
All this time I thought it's something that your generation grew up.
No,
I'm with.
We were, you know, Christian families, mostly Christian families, especially, I mean, possibly my great grandfather was Christianized because he come from the Eastern Cape. So they've all been, you know, long time been alienated from core, you know, indigenous traditions. So for me, discovering this is a way of, in some way, of trying to discover what has been lost and my relationship to it. And as such, yeah, no, the only bow that I saw in a photo, in a drawing, now that I think of it, was Ukupu in a book in standard 3. It was, those books were called Ezezwe Nezalo. Ezezwe Nezalo was a book, it went grade by grade. I think it started in standard 3 up to standard 6, you know. And Ezezwe Nezalo was one part history and one part social studies. And so, one of these, I think it was the social studies part, could have been the history, it had this drawing of a xylophone, you know, a marimba, I should say, and a ukupu.
Okay.
And
I have to stop you there and explain us in ukupu. Or what is a marimba? If you, because I can see you've got plenty of instruments here, and also can you give us the taste of it, the sound, so that we could also understand?
Yeah, now that I've mentioned, I do have an example of Ugubu.
Please.
Ugubu is one of a musical instruments that are much closer to our local African traditions because it's found in most, among possibly all Bantu ethnic groups, you know, and further. And so, yeah, I can describe it as such as it is. It's a single string musical instrument.
Yes.
It's only got one string and it's fitted with a resonator. It's gupu, you know, so a chamber, a calabash to amplify the sound. Because being a single string like that, these types of instruments are not as loud or as audible, you know, enough, you know, and they're very soft. So the thing of amplifying, some of them use the mouth to amplify, but some like the ugubu, which I'm holding here, they use a resonator like a calabash to amplify the sound of the string, you know, and also to manipulate some of the musical producing aspects of the instrument. So this is the probably is a this is the sound of the string, you know. But now maybe I should play it correctly and use a little stick on my right hand as I've been pinching it now. I don't know if this is audible enough.
No, I can hear it.
So this is a ugubu, and a very a typical a sonic character, very bassy, and also characterized by, due to the manipulation of the calabash, away, closer or away from the body, you get these so-called harmonics, you know, the little voices above the basic.
So would you say, where is it originated? Is it was it found maybe here in KZN or the Eastern Cape part? Where about the African or South African place?
As I say, Mshana, it's a very widely distributed instrument in Africa, in all of Africa, especially among the Bantu. There are different types. You'll find most ethnic groups have a version of the instrument. For example, an instrument such as the Swati and Zulu speaking Bantu would call ugubu, or if Swati, ligubu. A version of it is uwadi in Xhosa, just south, the southern Nguni. Among the Xhosa, it will be called uwadi, but it's practically the same instrument, you know. Perhaps differing in the kind of repertoires and the musical characteristics that it takes from on the instrument, perhaps the tuning of the instrument. And similarly, the same instrument you'll find, like I say, among all the indigenous people in one version or another. Just the instrument perhaps that is, you know, as the berimbau among the Afro-Brazilian, associated with capoeira. It's of Angolan origin.
Oh.
It's called Mbulumbumba. It's very similar to uhati and ugubu, which is also found in Malawi, you know, ugubu, and elsewhere in East Africa, as well across the oceans, where in the islands, in Madagascar, there is an instrument very similar, the Tsetsilava, you know. It's so much like Mbulumbumba, you know. And also in Reunion Island, you'll find the Bobri. They're all instruments of African origin. And I guess even for traveling people like us who've migrated, they are easy to carry around and replicate, but still they carry the essence of musicality and sensibility even far from their sources. So a matter of origin would be a very difficult one for me, you know, to have to pinpoint. And I don't think it matters that much, you know, in the scheme of things.
Yes.
You know, those things that were okay to the earliest people, you know, and were developed with time. As I say, the earliest versions didn't use a resonator, but they used the mouth. For example, a bow like a umqangala, shorter bow like this, which similar is distributed among all the African people, indigenous people, does not normally use a resonator or a calabash. Don't mind this, mine, I'll fix this because I innovate.
Yeah.
But umqangala, which is made of reed, and it's also a single string instrument, only uses the mouth as a resonator
to
enhance the sound. You know. So without perhaps a resonator, you'd hear something like... But using the mouth... So as you heard, perhaps there's an enhancement of the loudness of this. Also, used because of the manipulation of the cavity of the mouth, you can enhance those vibrations called harmonics.
Yes,
that are part of the sound sonic phenomenon of these instruments, and from which theoretically all the music, the scales and the harmonies. Derive from.
Wow. With this one that you just played, manje umqangala. I've been hearing ama overtones. Like as you keep on playing, I'm hearing
the melody,
yeah. The sounds that.
Yes, the melody. Yeah. It's,
Would you say umqangala can fit with any instruments or could be played with modern instruments as well?
Theoretically, it can if one was so inclined, because of the tuning and the kind of music that it is possible to create and to add to. But it would be really oppressive on this instrument to belabor them with a technology which they predate by millions of years, you know. And I think their point is just that. Perhaps we don't need all the kind of technology that we have to express, you know, profound musicality. And also, since you were going to ask, the most important thing I think about indigenous music and indigenous instruments is their relationship to nature.
Mm. You
know, these sounds that these instruments make, they have the sensitive ear of nature in them. I think the natural ear, the phenomenon that hears us, that takes on our vibration, they hear these instruments much better and readily than any other sound we make that is enhanced or synthesized. Because of these instruments, they are used, for example, in healing. Some cultures use this in healing. And also to communicate to nature, like animals, you know, like the bees, or even to hunt, to attract wildlife.
Wow.
You know, and of course the thing of entertainment, and also to enhance communication. You know, So for me, the most important thing about indigenous sound is the way they are heard by nature. You know, they still speak. You can bring, when you play drums, skin on the drums, you can talk to unseen spirits. Mm. They can come and enter a person, or unwanted spirits can leave a person, or can take that person's consciousness and the person goes into a trance. Indigenous instruments, or relating to space and nature, using indigenous instruments, you know, the voice and, you know, and natural materials, speaks to nature.
Wow.
More readily, you know.
Malum, ngicela nje mina ungidlalele noma okay, asiye kwi flute. Asiye kwi flute because I'm so fascinated by the sounds, you
okay.
know.
All right, since we were on the mouthpour, let me just say a bit of this, that they are of different types, of course.
Okay.
For example, among the same people, you would find most likely, you see this umqangala.
Yes.
It's got one length of string, you know, undivided.
Yeah.
One end to another. But you'll find another musical bow of about the same size with the string divided in the middle, you know, with a hook.
Okay.
This one has got two segments. You know, still a mouth bow. And this one is called variously, but among the Isizulu speaking and Swati speaking Bantu, it's called a stontol or skumkuman. And as such, it's divided, so you have two basic notes or fundamental notes. That's the most usual tuning, as you can hear.
Wow. I'm speechless because I saw you tuning it before you even start to play it, and which I think we've mentioned this, Uti. You can play it with any,
of course.
It can fit with
you can play
any,
it in an ensemble, yes. An ensemble, yes. A setting with a sensitive ensemble. You can play a whole, maybe three of them, the same instruments in an ensemble with itself, different players, you know, with other tuned bows and other instruments, you know, different instruments, you know.
I mean, I'm going to say with flute because I want to learn more about it. And I must say, if you are listening at home, Umalume has a very unique flute and it looks stunning.
No, this is possibly misleading as a local flute, but a flute all the same, because there's various types of local flutes. Even, you know, one basic type is the one that has no holes for stopping the finger. You know. They just played on one end and stopped on the other end, you know. But they play using harmonics, so you get scales, you know. on those instruments. And then you get others that have finger holes, you know, punched into them so that you can change the notes by, you know, pressing or the hole or stopping or opening the holes, you know. And it is from such that I was led to other types of flutes that have more perhaps than one hole, you know. But I brought this only to maybe to pique your interest about the sound of wind, you know, in the sense that, you know, acoustic sound is very powerful and communicates readily to nature.
So, with this one that you just played now, would you say it's an instrument to learn, or it's easy to also build it?
The flute, it's easy to build a flute. It's very easy to build a flute, especially local flute like umjingo, like I say, that have no holes.
Oh,
you can build it from any. You can play umjingo from any pipe, including hose pipe. You can play, including a reed that you've, you know, put, make it you know, broken through the joints. You can cut anything umsenge or popo. You can play umjingo. A traditional local flute. I must apologize. I didn't bring such umjingo, but it's very interesting. It's very easy because most of the instruments, especially in local traditions, they start with a youth. You know, from when you were young. You know, so their technology is not as sophisticated as is with other kai, where the making of instrument is a kai, is a, like a tradition, it's a secret. Most of local instruments, they are easy to make. And also, I don't know about playing, that's another story, but to manufacture, it's
easy.
Quite accessible, yeah.
What can be done to ensure that younger generations continues to learn and appreciate indigenous instruments?
The younger generation. I think it would have to start right there in their earliest education or at home, like I say. If in our homes we found space to make music with indigenous instruments, our voices and together, you know, even by ourselves. But if we started at our homes, to make music using such instruments, you know, and also, but then that touches on other issues, that these instruments are demanding that we have families, because that's what they enhance, the instituting of family and its relationship to society, and all those stages of growing and relating to. That's why they're asking for these instruments, you know. So starting from there, I suppose we need to have families, you know.
Before we close, because we almost now, I think we've got two questions left. What are some of the challenges and rewards of learning to play indigenous instruments?
Is there invisibility in popular culture? and in the way that we make music or music is portrayed to us as informing. Ways of being in the music that we play, kind of obscures, first of all, it obscures nature, or our relationship to nature. If it doesn't totally abuse it, we play loud instruments, we play at night, there's no children, there's no old people play, So I think focusing on indigenous instruments may help us to focus on our basic relationships to nature and to ourselves and to sound.
So if one wants to learn more instruments, where can they find you, or are you on social media, or is there a school that it's designed to learn more about indigenous instruments?
Personally, at the moment I'm not teaching, but maybe when I retire next year I will consider maybe establishing, a center where I can share the knowledge. Unfortunately, the instruments, indigenous instrumental music, is not taught in a broader sense. You don't, for even now, some of the instruments you will only come across if you are lucky to get to university or to college, which is a pity, like I say, because you can see where they matter. They matter in socializing right from the beginning.
Yeah.
And also in the essences that I'm mentioning, there are things that should not be hindered from access. They should be there from the word go. So I suppose if one wants to learn, it's really by research, asking questions and finding out. And just the interest, I think, and asking the right questions about knowledge gets you on the road, to learning, finding out about a particular instruments, about particular music.
Well, Dr. Sazi Dlamini, thank you so much for taking your time. Kutuzela uzosifundisa with indigenous instruments. I think we've learned a lot today. I must say we didn't finish all of them.
Thank you.
However, maybe with your permission, we can schedule another date and time, and then so that we could hear these sounds and also because we relate to them and with nature. I do believe that it's connect us, it's unite us
with nature.
With nature and also with each other, because we all know we grew up in our mothers or grandmothers and grandfathers were playing these instruments.
Yes.
Someone shared that they used to gather around the fire, and then when it's poetry time, and then one would play a Jewish harp, Istorodoro, to narrate these poems during the narration of these poems, and I think it's fascinating. It's something that I didn't grow up.
It's a lucky person, poetry at home.
Yes, like my aunt will be sitting watching TV, but she's playing a Jewish harp, and I'm like, and why? It's like, I'm not. As much as I'm bored watching, but this is the sound that is coming to me right now, So thank you so much.
No, thank you, Mshana. Thank you for this opportunity.
This is an MUT Radio podcast.